Metrorex, the subcommittee meeting, March 20th, 2017.
Start the Metro Access Subcommittee. Thank you all for coming. Would you silence any devices that you have because this meeting is being taped? Excuse me. Thank you. Would you silence any devices that you have? Telephones, anything that will make noise? Meeting is being taped. We're going to start introducing ourselves. I am Denise Rush from Suitland, Maryland, and I'm the Vice Chair of the Metro Access Subcommittee. And so to my left.
I'm Carol Bellamy. I'm from Montgomery County. I'm in the school I have to
Steve
Kavanaugh,
and
I
live in Washington, D.C.
I'm Charlie Crawford, reporting for from Silver Spring.
I'm Kevin Benji from Fairfax Mountain, Virginia.
Hey, Mike, advocate for Fairfax County.
Okay. I'm Mark Nash, Metro Access.
William Proctor, Metro Access.
Allison Anderson, Metro Access.
You are here for Metro Access.
Carl Baker, Metro Access.
Arkady Kinchin, Metro Access.
David Schaefer, ADA Policy and Planning.
Stephanie Thorne, Metro Access.
Celise Little, Metro Access.
Jen Weber, MTM.
Carlton Brown, MTM.
Francine White, PG County.
Go on, ladies.
Nicole Miller, Fairfax County.
Ashley Arias, Fairfax County.
Christina Randolph, Metro Access.
Pablo Shonby, Transportation.
Eddie Cranford, National Express Transportation.
Shannon Boris, First Transit.
Al Folks, Transdev.
Lamont Hogan, D.C.
Albert Freeman, Suitland, Maryland.
If there's anyone who wants to make public comments, make sure your name gets on the list.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
This is Captain. We have only 5 members on the committee, so we don't have a quorum. We can go ahead with the meeting, of course.
Okay, thank you. The Chair for the subcommittee has just arrived.
Yes.
So we will proceed to approve the agenda.
Madam Chair, I move we approve the agenda.
I second it.
So the agenda's been approved. Is anybody opposed?
All right.
Thank you, Ms. Rush. Paul Simmelfort, Metro Access Subcommittee Chairperson, PG County, Capitol Heights, Maryland. Welcome, everyone. I presume we went through introductions here already?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to let everyone know, as customers are coming in, the AAC has made a motion and recommended that any customer who comes down here can speak their 3 minutes. If a customer has anything in writing, that will go to Metro Access staff to deal with, but no other customer will be speaking for another customer's 3 minutes. That will go to staff. They thoroughly will investigate it, but so that will be that, and I will remind all customers of that right before the public speaking comment period. Thank you. Did we go to approval? We did approve of the agenda minutes, right? Okay.
Not the agenda.
Yeah, okay.
But not the minutes.
So now we are looking for approval of the minutes from the meeting last month in February. Are there any corrections, any changes? Yes?
There's one correction on page 6. It says Ms. Bush asked some questions about the change in bus fare. Would it affect other some of the customers? And it was Ms. Rush who asked that question.
All right.
It's on page 6 of the minutes.
So if someone can follow up with you at the meeting to make those exact corrections, it'd be sincerely appreciated so those minutes do get corrected. Or any other comments, that changes that need to be made to the minutes or corrections? Yes?
I move the minutes be accepted as amended.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions. Okay, the minutes are approved with the needed corrections from Ms. Rush as amended. Thank you. Next will be customer service and outreach reports.
Thank you, Mrs. Dunport. At this time, I would like to have Mr. Carlton Brown with MTM give the report on the public comments from last session.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson, committee, good afternoon. For the customer outreach report, for all the complaints or concerns expressed in the previous meeting, we've called and investigated complaints made. We've also spoken with or left messages for the individuals with regards to the results we've been able to find. Also in that process, we did notify the different service delivery providers as well as operational control center of any possible errors or solutions that we may help, would have helped the customer involved with the complaint.
All right, thank you.
Next, I would like to have Ms. Felice Little give the outreach report. Oh, Stephanie, you're doing it? Sorry. Ms. Stephanie Thorne to give the outreach report from last session.
Good afternoon. On March 2nd, 2017, Ms. Little and myself attended the Vita Senior Center on Calvert Street Northwest. We spoke about the service and we had interpreters. There was a mostly Spanish-speaking audience, and so we were able to answer some questions and speak about acquiring Metro Access service as well as our senior smart trip cards, and the Spanish customer guide. Thank you.
Thank you. That would conclude our customer service and outreach report for today.
All right, thank you. And next is the Michael Wilson Award.
We are going to have Mr. Pablo Recho, Assistant Project Manager with Energy Transportation, present the recognition award for this afternoon.
May please, committee. On behalf of Energy Transportation, we are honored to announce that the OCC Dispatch Supervisor, Ms. Christina Randolph, as recipient of the Michael Wilson Award for March 2017. Ms. Randolph has been employed with MP Transportation in her current role since January 4th, 2016. Her utmost devotion to duty is amplified by her consistent volunteerism. More than any of her peers, she consistently extends her time in the office as a supervisor, to ensure all Metro Access customers receive the utmost care they deserve. She's always lending her time, whether a weekday or a weekend, to assist upper management with any and all challenges facing services delivery as a whole. Her exceptional ability to handle escalated calls is exemplary and contagious. In closing, the leadership quality that this Landau brings forth every day epitomizes the quote by Mr. Nelson Mandela, whereas one should live life as though no one's watching and express oneself as though everyone is listening. Her self-sacrifice and overall commitment toward the Metro Access program and ultimately the customers for which she serves is boundless. We are so grateful for her model of professionalism and devotion to serving others. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that presentation. Ms. Rush, I guess at this time I have some awards and then we're going to go to our first presentation.
I've been riding Metro Access for 18 years and I decided this year I'm going to start the Denise Rush or African Queen Awards monthly. Just like the Michael Wilson, the whole system. We all need each other, and people go out their way often to do a lot of things for the customers, but we never give, you know, recognition for those that we notice. So for the month of January, I want to have a gift for Bea Moore, because she does everything for all of us. And I think she should get the first Denise Rush Award.
Yeah. I don't see Bea here yet or in the room, but I'm sure she stepped out.
So that's for January. For February, in the call center, when I make reservations, this lady is extremely, I'm not used to her voice, she's new, I think, to the system, but I asked for her name, and it's Sierra Silver. She needs a thank you, because she goes above and beyond. And for the month of March is Roland Thompson, I think that's his name, or Thompson. He's in the where you make reservations also. So I just want to say thank you to them. And every month, after Michael Wilson, I'll have an award for something.
Thank you. And I'm sure staff will get it to the individuals in the call center. Thank you so much. So let's see. B, we can give when she comes. And these two people, I'm sure we can get to in the call center. Thank you so much. All right, thank you so much. Next is the Metro Access Customer Satisfaction presentation.
Yes, this afternoon we have Jason Minter, a long friend of the committee, who is our Director of Customer Research, that will be giving this presentation this afternoon.
Thank you, Allison. It's nice to be before the committee again, so I welcome the opportunity. Are we going to have a PowerPoint? If not, I can speak generally to the findings and then circulate the handouts. I'll just give them. Great. We've made some improvements to the Metro Access Research Program. I'll talk about a little bit. update you on perceptions of Metro Access Metro in general, customer satisfaction among Access customers, some ratings of Access services, customers' knowledge and usage of Access programs, and a likelihood to use travel training in the future. I believe maybe 18 to 24 months ago, I reported on these results, and I wanted to provide an update for Allison's suggestion. You may or may not recall, but Access Research Program currently operates two separate surveys, one which is customer satisfaction, and the other is knowledge and usage. The satisfaction survey measures your standard customer satisfaction and also satisfaction in different service areas, such as comfort, cleanliness, driver, courteousness. The knowledge and usage focuses more on customers or registrants' understanding of Access and the services that it provides. These have always been done separately and at different points and at different times throughout the year. So customer satisfaction was done twice annually, and knowledge and usage was done four times. We've, in an effort to improve data quality, comparability, analytics, and also add cost savings to Access services, combined these two surveys into one study that will allow us to do some insight gathering that we hadn't been able to do previously because data points were collected in two different surveys. What it also does is improves and aligns the Access research program with the fixed route services program, which currently collects data on a quarterly basis. So we've brought them all into alignment now with similar metrics and similar collection points. So we're very excited about this. The award for the new contract has not been made, but myself and others are working towards that now, and hope to have an update to the group in the near term. Wonderful. As I previously reported on, which was a profile of current registrants, at that reporting, I believe there were 34,000 registrants. We're now at 42,000. So, it's a big increase in the 18 months since I last spoke. But little has changed by way of the profile. We break out registrants into three broad groups, one being a light user, one being a mild user, and one being a heavy user. And what we found in thinking of these in terms of usage, we made some remarkable, I think, insights into the community. What we understand is that 68% of our customers, registrants, I'll say, account for 4% of the trips. Those are our light customers. So, put that into perspective, 68% of that 42,000 makes an average of three trips annually. So not even one quarter. 18% of our customers are mild users and make an average of about 49 trips annually. And that accounts for about 18% of the trips. So that's more in line. That's what you'd like to see is the proportion of the customer base represent the trip base. Then there's the heavy user group. The heavy user group is only made up of 14% of the customer base, or roughly about 5,000 customers, and they account for 78% of the trips that are made annually on Metro Access. So that's 14% making up 78% of the trips made. So that's an average of about 272 trips annually. I think these are important distinctions to make with among the registrant community, because what it says is that smaller group of customers using the service more than the others, it may be impacting the service levels for everyone. So it's something that we need to take into consideration when we're considering policy in the future. We also, and as part of these programs, measure Access customers' favorability towards Metro Access. And what I can say is that since 2015 till end of 2016, Metro Access customer favorability towards Metro has declined rather sharply from a net favorability score. And that's basically where you say, you take the percent that say Metro Access has gotten better, and the percent that say Metro Access has gotten worse, and you subtract it. And that net score pretty much bears out where that positivity is or the favorability toward the program. At the beginning of 2015, it was at 41%. And at the end of 2016, it was at 16%. Still on the plus side, but a dramatic drop in over, you know, a two-year time. So that's something that we monitor on a regular basis, both for Metro Access and for Scout Service. Customer satisfaction. After a uptick at the beginning of 2015 to the high at the beginning of 2016 of 80%, 80% of customers saying they were satisfied, we dropped slightly to 70% at the end of 2016. And I don't normally react too negatively to shifts in customer satisfaction because it can be a result of seasonality as well as service level delivery. This begs some additional review, but I will say with the change in the program to where we're able to collect the data on a more regular basis, we'll be able to measure the nuances of that shift. That may not have been, it could have been at the, you know, first and in the middle of 2016 at 82% and it took a dive. It's very difficult to discern only measuring it twice a year. So at this point, I think we're still in a good place. We're right in line with fixed route, but we'll certainly want to investigate why that dropped through 2016. Now, what might have contributed to the decreased satisfaction? We measure as part of the satisfaction survey a host of items. I think roughly 15. I forget the exact number off the top of my head. Sure, I'm happy to read them. Vehicle operated safely. So we ask customers if they're satisfied with how well the vehicle was operated. Driver courteousness, overall personal safety, driver helpfulness, cleanliness of the vehicle, ease of making reservation, driver navigation, comfort while on the vehicle, whether or not they arrive at their destination on time, picked up in the promised window, dispatcher courteousness, route efficiency, and dispatch driver coordination. So it's a host of different factors that would influence the service quality that customers receive. What we found is that in a lot of cases, our customers, 90% or more of our customers say that they're satisfied with nearly half of the items, and another 80%+ for many of the others. What we found in this most recent measurement is that three items most critically impacted satisfaction. Those were trip routed in an efficient way, dispatcher-driver coordination, and arriving at destination on time. So what that tells us is that decline in satisfaction is largely driven by those three factors. Whether or not they were routed in what they believe to be an efficient way, whether or not they arrived at their destination on time, and how well they believe dispatching the driver coordinated. So if we were to hopefully make improvements in satisfaction over the next several months, these are three areas that we want to focus on. As part of the knowledge and usage survey, we pay attention to how familiar customers are with various programs. Next slide, please. Our programs tend to have very high favorability. There are two programs of note that jumped between the end of 2015 and the end of 2016. Those were instant access increased by 7 percentage points, which is great, and access key alerts, which I think is very important for understanding service delivery. We did see familiarity drop somewhat with free ride program and the web booking. Web booking familiarity was really high. I believe we were doing some promotion of it late last year, and that would account for why it's plateaued a little bit with new registrations coming in. I am happy to say that Easy Pay and elevator dealers have remained similarly familiar to customers, and I think those are two very important programs in day-to-day use of Metro Access. So lastly, we've taken a look at travel training and likelihood of using it in the future. Next slide, please. I don't think this would be of any surprise to anyone, but most customers, regardless of how often they use Metro Access, are unlikely to use the travel training program in the future. Light and mild users are the most indecisive on whether they would, and that's likely because they are using the service enough to sort of justify to themselves, you know, why do I need to take fixed route? I don't even take it all that often. And then heavy users say they are likely to use travel training in the future, about 30% of them. So I think, you know, the future of travel training is still, you know, up to Metro Access and the team as a whole, but for some customers, this is a viable program that has been helping them, you know, transition from access to fixed route services. So with that, I'm happy, welcome to take questions, provide comment.
All right, who would like to begin with comments as it relates to this presentation here?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Charlie.
I would also.
And Ed, and anyone else? Tap in. Anyone else right now? You raise your hand. Oh, Kent, Mr. Kent. Okay. All right, so in this order right now, we have Charlie, then Ed, then Tappan, then Mr. Kent. All right, go ahead, Charlie. And the mic gets the on the 3 minutes.
That's
all right.
On my way in today, it's funny you should mention those three areas of most concern, because that's exactly what I heard from the other person on the table with me. And she said that she used to come to these meetings, but she got worn down by the continuation of the same problems.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, the same problems you just articulated. So that leads me to ask the question, it would appear to me that this is a fairly consistent problem, and what activities are you undertaking to combat those issues? Because apparently it continues to happen, and it's very frustrating to the persons that use it.
Sure, I have to defer to Mr. Kent, who's better equipped to answer that question.
So, Mr. Crawford, can you be a little bit more specific? Do you mean what you're looking to know what staff's position is on this?
No, I'm looking at the general problem of people being either picked up from their home, go to work, and then get an add-on comes on the way to their work, so they have to go somewhere else, get that person, bring them back, or they're going to work times, and other similar problems of being taken from the rise and then the scheduling again puts them sort of humanly past their destination, which they have to come back to. I know it's been discussed here before, but I'm concerned about what exactly are the activities I'm taking to try to combat that.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm going to be nice to my team, and I'm going to answer this question for them today. Because depending on which one of them I call on, a slightly different perspective is offered, and this is what I mean. You know, Allison Anderson's job in the call center is to make sure that the procedures that we've laid down are followed, in that the staff at MB are monitoring potentially late trips and taking actions to prevent them from being late before they are late, or to help make them not as late as they otherwise would be. I think, and you know, today we heard one of the MD dispatchers received recognition for excellent work. I think there are a lot of folks in the call center that do excellent work moving the trips. And my evidence for this is the fact that, given the difficulties that the contractors have had recently, you know, we mentioned the number of drivers. We mentioned how that's been a problem recently, and they've been working to staff up. If the individuals in the call center led by MD's management, John Gray and Paul Alessio, were not taking quick action to move the trips, the lateness would be worse. They're watching very carefully throughout the day to see where there are canceled trips and opportunities to move them so that they are not late, and that's primarily what they do. Now, at the same time, when we don't have as many drivers in the system, when the dispatchers look in the computer for opportunities to move the trips, they don't have as many choices, because they can only move the trips onto vans that are actually running. So that is part of the problem. And even though, you know, any of you could look at some of the trips that we provided and say, well, this routing doesn't look very logical, many times it's because the dispatcher's been given a really ugly choice. And it's either do that, or the trip would otherwise be late for a different reason. The customer would simply be sitting waiting to be picked up. At least with the moves that have been made, the customer gets picked up, but you know, once they're on board the vehicle, the ride time sometimes can be a little longer when they have to share a ride, especially with someone that's going somewhere that isn't quite along the route that would otherwise have been taken. So, you know, that's kind of a long way to say that we can reduce the number of times that this happens by having ample driver resources out there and by having very actively involved dispatchers and good management in the call center. But at the same time, we can't necessarily eliminate it, because even when we are doing our best, that's one reason why we have the goal of 92% on-time performance instead of 100, because we still operate in one of the nation's most congested traffic areas. And there are just some things that the best laid plans that Metro Access might make are just not going to come true. So you all tend to notice it more when we're having trouble. If we are having trouble with resources, you're going to see it happen more often. When we get back on our A game and we shore up those resources, you're going to see it less. But it isn't something that I or anybody else who runs paratransit can guarantee that it won't happen. But our job is to make sure that it happens as rarely as possible. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Next is Ed, followed by Tappan. And then I have a customer comment before Mr. Kent.
Okay. Chart number 5, where it says the favorability, Metro Access. Mm-hmm. Was that drop attributable to the increased number of people? I think Mr. Kent answered that, but increased people do the same track.
I think it could be related to any number of things. We haven't taken the perspective to kind of suss that out, but we could explore that. It's very difficult with these monitoring tools to inject sort of topical elements to get a sense. But what I can say from a fixed route perspective, which would likely carry over to Metro Access as well, is that SafeTrack has been impacting the quality of service delivery. So the answer to your question is yes and no, right? So it's not fully attributed to SafeTrack, but partially is attributed.
Can I have put on chart 7? Mm-hmm. When you got there, route efficiency, dispatch slash driver coordination, right there together, they're both great. They're very much related.
Yes.
I'm assuming that the schedule that is filled out in the morning, the software adjusts for efficiency of route. But I know that I see sometimes, you know, it's more you hear it from the drivers. And the dispatcher will wipe something off, add something on, and whatever. And sometimes the drivers feel like they're being pushed and pulled all over the place. So that may stay down like that permanently.
Well, let me just make this comment. This chart that Jason has provided is a summation of what customers say when they're asked, when they're given these, and they're given these choices, right? So these categories, we're asking them, I guess, to rate how important, how prevalent is each one of these. And, you know, whenever we investigate customer service issues, a lot of times, you know, you have to recognize that, number one, this is perception. This report should not be confused with the reports that Mr. Hayford provides, where he says, this is how on time or how late we were. This report is about asking customers, how do you think the service has been going lately? You know, or as Janet used to say, what have you done for me lately? And, you know, having said that, you know, this is a perception thing. Now, if you were to dig into what people say on a customer survey, there are going to be some instances where they say, well, you know what, there was no coordination with dispatch. There was no logical routing. And what won't surface in these surveys are things like, well, you know, the route on that particular day, that happened because there was a detour, or a road closed, or a customer came out very late from an appointment, or there were two no-shows. You know, I mean, there are a lot of different things that influence the way that the service works. So I agree with you. I think some of these categories, I mean, whenever I look at these surveys, it's kind of like, you know, being asked the question, are you still kicking your dog? Right, you know, notice I changed that for 21st century, you know, life. But, you know, are you still kicking your dog? Because, yeah, on any given month, you could make these observations about some percentage of Metro Access service. Our goal is to make these numbers as small as possible on that end. And, you know, the ones at the top, they're still 95%, you know, when I read vehicle operating safely, driver courteousness, which I think is the same as courtesy, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, it's a, you know, technical term, you know. Safety, driver helpfulness, cleanliness, I mean, we're getting consistently high scores in the 90 percentile on these, and I think that says something. Because those are obviously perception, too. But to make an observation about why is my van going in this order of pickups today could be a lot of different reasons. And, you know, the one thing I can assure you of is that we're not taking you in odd directions because we decided to be cheap and park the vans on purpose. If we have the vans, we're going to put them out there. But the issue really is that sometimes it really is an issue of driver resources.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next is Tappan, and yeah. Then there are two customer comments before Mr. Ken.
My comment to Jason. Jason, looking at the statistics of the training program,
yep.
Likely to use in the future, it seems to me that I think it's not anything that it's gone now and then not really much interest on training for the people. Not sure and unlikely, the percentage is very high on both group light and mild end users. So my question to Mr. Kent, based on the what's going on in the market situations, have you ever thought of maybe you should look into the training area, see if it's necessary or not, or save money or whatever you think?
You know something, Tappan, I just say your corporate executive experience has shown. Oh, maybe we don't need that resource. Here's a place to cut. I'm telling you what, who said the AAC can't be a corporate team? I think you guys are right on the line. You know, as I look over at Cheryl, who's kind of like, gosh, you can't take my travel trainers. We need these people. But let me share something. Very important point you all need to follow on the slide. And actually, could you put that slide back up, number 9?
Yeah, it's number 9 slide, yeah. It's very interesting to see.
And for Denise and Charlie's benefit, I'm gonna share that this is a graph, this is a bar chart, that shows for light, mild, and heavy users of Metro Access. Gotta start there.
But you look at the
there are three categories for each one of them that says, are you likely? not likely or not sure that you will use fixed route service in the future based on having taken travel training. The big thing that is not, I think maybe may not be evident from looking at this slide, is that we do travel training for a lot of other people. The majority of people who we travel train are not the existing Metro Access customers. They are people who are coming over to Metro and saying, hey, I have a disability, what can you do for me? And before we automatically put them on Metro Access as a new customer, we spend a lot of quality time with them showing them how bus and rail could work for them too. Now, they may ultimately become Metro Access eligible anyway because of what the law, you know, the way the law lays out the criteria. But there are a lot of people who, as soon as they get that white card, where do they go? Straight out to bus and rail because it's what? Free. Denise Rush says quickly. You know, so that's exactly right. So that is the point here. We are trying to go back, and I think this is where Tappan's comment comes in. We are trying to ask the Metro Access customer base whether or not there's any, you know, any chance that they might be willing to try fixed route after they've already become accustomed to our very high quality paratransit service that issues door to door to each and every customer each and every day of the year. And some of them, after having received this stellar door-to-door service, have decided that they wish to stay with that service instead of going back to fixed route. So, you know, that's really the point behind this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Before your comments, I do have two customer comments that I'm going to insert first from Mr. Miser. So one customer in the audience said, has this question. Was door-to-door service used as a factor in the patient satisfaction survey, or customer satisfaction survey? If not, why no? So that's the first one from one customer. Do you want to tackle that first before I get to the second question from another customer?
Yeah, I would again refer to the chart on slide 7. Driver helpfulness, what we do see quite a bit is that drivers are very helpful to Metro Access customers, and that will include helping them from door to door.
All right. And the next
91%.
And the next question is from another customer. Are they monitoring trips for lateness? What happened from the last month's meeting that someone was going to contact Seema Gross about habitual job lateness with an add-on, lateness for dialysis and more?
So what is the question?
So, are they monitoring trips for lateness? What happened last month to from last month's meeting that someone was going to contact Seema Gross about habitual job lateness with an add-on, lateness for dialysis and more?
I can clear it up.
Is that you?
Of course.
We'll understand that they were monitoring
these trips so they won't have all this lateness. I brought it up last month for the young lady who goes to dialysis at the time that she cannot come to the meeting. No one contacted her. And that's the one I told you that's at the Capitol. And she tells me where to pick her up. They're always across the streets. And that particular day at the meeting, she said, I gotta go. I think that's them across the street, but she has a problem. And they pick her up on time. That's why I said I want to see the statistics for arrival on time for work. Because late picking up early, if you arrive around 2 hours, what good is that? I'd rather you pick me up late and get me one of them. But what happens with her? They pick her up and pick up other people and make her late for her job. Or they don't pick her up on time for dialysis. Now, since last month, no one called her, and I gave the information.
Thank you.
Her mother has been picking her up, comes all the way from Maryland, all the way to the Capitol to take her and get it out.
So, Ms. Armstrong, now you're saying you brought forward a complaint for another customer?
Yes.
And you gave the information to me?
Well, it should be in the written, so whoever asked for it,
okay.
I read it.
So we'll follow up on that with okay. the other customer. Inspector, we'll probably come and talk with you a little bit
okay.
after the meeting on this. But to answer the question related to this presentation.
Well, see, that's what I was saying, because you said they're monitoring latents, so they must not be monitoring her, because there is almost every day.
Well, this particular presentation that Jason has done, this is a survey of asking random customers what they think. So the part you're talking about is one of the three orange bars on this chart that was identified as most critical factor to customer satisfaction was arrived at destination on time. So I think it's the one that you're talking about. So people are expressing in this latest survey some concern because that one was only at 78%. And, you know, saying, okay, yeah, we kind of like that to be a little higher. I mean, some people would say 78 is pretty good, but, you know, compared to the other things we have in the 90s, we could work on it. And I think the point is Metro Access customers expect that when they book their trips by appointment, that they're going to make those appointments on time. And it would seem that recently the survey is reflecting that we've not done as good of a job in that area. So that's something that we need to work on.
All right. Ms. Rush, did you have a comment before Mr. Kent?
Not for Mr. Kent, but I think you need, because we have a lot of people who have arrived late, you need to announce about if you cannot bring, the customer has to be present to file their complaint.
Well, she files and she calls, but she can't give up her dialysis just to come here.
No, excuse me. We voted, the AAC voted, the committee voted, as of this meeting, from now on, Billie Jean, when you have a customer and you're representing it, you can only put it down in paper. The person has to be present. We voted that because we have so many people who want to come. But whatever you put on paper will be addressed. But the person has to be present. And you didn't hear that, so I wanted to make sure that anyone who came in late heard that.
Thank you. Can I ask the question, or do I need to write it down about what you just said?
No, well,
because I think it's really unfair for people that have to
let's move on with this. You can address your concern during the
question
comment period. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead, Darnice, as it relates to this presentation, then we'll give the last word to Mr. Kent, so because we have to move on with another presentation.
Darnice Henry-Bush, Washington, D.C. My concern is based on what is the difference between the dispatcher courteousness and the dispatch driver coordination? Because it's a great degree between that, and then I want to make a comment. Okay.
So dispatcher courteousness is when you call in to make a reservation and how politely and professionally they handle the call and the reservation. And then dispatch driver coordination is the interaction between the driver and the dispatcher to communicate your desired location for a drop off point.
Okay, well, I would like to make a complaint about the dispatch driver coordination. Even though 64% seems rather high, it should be lower because many times I'm on the vehicle and the driver, well, the dispatch will call the driver, or if the driver steps off of the vehicle, when they come back, they have a new trip set there, and many times they get lost coming to my home, and the dispatch continuously calls the driver, but drivers can't answer when they're en route. So I think that is an area that really needs to be looked at because that causes drivers to be late even more. I mean, it would probably increase the on-time trips, and that particular incident was looked into more.
Thank you.
Ms. Bush, I have given the manager of the call center the appropriate facial expressions on your behalf. Now, I think we may want to give him some time to look into that. You know, I think that's pretty insightful what Darnese is saying. We have communication systems for drivers to talk with the dispatcher that are fairly state-of-the-art, but you know, you can misuse technology, and sometimes you can tweak technology. We also have some drivers that complain that the calls from dispatch distract or interrupt them while they're trying to drive the vehicle, but unfortunately we need information from them. It's been some time, I think, since we've studied the manner in which that is done. You know, some drivers are more comfortable with text messages than others. We give the drivers a lot of options. They don't always take those options. And the same can be said of the dispatchers. So I think that's a good area to work on. As far as the percentage is concerned, 64, but it's the out of all the measures on here, it's the lowest score. So I think that in itself warrants more attention to it. So thank you for sharing that.
All right, Mr. Kent, you have the last word. So on this topic, and therefore we can move on to the next subject, conversation and customer education campaign.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to just start by thanking Jason Mincer, who has been a fantastic partner to Access Services. You know, it's easy to sit and look at a survey and speculate about what it might mean. It's another thing entirely to take survey results and use them to improve service. And one thing that I want to share with you is that we invited Mr. Mincer into our leadership meetings a long time ago when he first started putting out both sets of surveys, the customer satisfaction and the knowledge and usage surveys, because we wanted to use these survey instruments to a certain purpose. Now, you all as committee members, and this is why I wanted to speak, I want to just say that you all as committee members will look at this and say, well, aren't we here to look at the customer satisfaction scores and ask the Metro staff why, if there are any low scores, why is that? And shouldn't we do a better job for Metro Access customers? Well, I say yes. I think that is a big part of what you all do. And we expect to come here and give you explanations. We expect to work harder to improve satisfaction with paratransit service. But there's another thing that can be gained from looking at this information. And this is where the staff needs help from you. And what it's about, and I know that in particular, you know, Elver, Ms. Rush, Ms. Bellamy, Ms. Bush, a number of you have made it a point over the years, Paul especially, to say, how does Metro make people aware of the things they need to know? Every time something happens around here, Paul Semmelford says, is that message going on the IVR? He's like, first thing he says, he wants to make sure that Metro is keeping people informed. Now, only you can tell us if you think we do a good job at that. But when I look at these surveys and I hear people say, and maybe let's go to, which one is it? Let's go to slide 8, if we could. So slide 8 is, what do people know about the services that Metro provides? So I'm looking over here and I'm saying, all right, well, again, these are Metro Access customers, which means the majority of them are eligible to ride free on bus and rail. And yet only 19% of them say that they are aware that they can get alerts sent to them when elevators are out of service.
But I do know that while customers call in and may be put on hold, there's a repetition of different types of, I presume, sort of educational things about, you know, talking about instant access, e-alerts, those things until they receive someone human, maybe reservations or where's my ride or something else.
And we're trying. That's another example, Mr. Chair, of what we've been trying to do to educate people is to say, okay, while they're sitting on hold, we have old on hold music and messaging that plays. Well, all right, so let's say for a moment that the customer in question who's answering the survey does not use Bus and Rail. I am a Metro Access customer and that's all I use. Well, only 23% of the respondents said that they knew that they could get Metro Access alerts. And the Metro Access alerts are very simply text messages that come to your phone to tell you when we're closed, if we have severe weather, things of that nature. You can get this, it's free. All you have to do is sign up for it. Only 23% of the people surveyed said that they had any idea what this was. And so, you know, and then, of course, the one that really surprised me is that only 65% of the respondents said that they knew about the fact that they could ride for free. Now, you know, I don't know about you, but I mean, if I'm eligible for something that's absolutely free, like being able to ride anywhere I want to on a rail system or a bus system, you know, I would consider that valuable. But yet that means that 35% of the folks are saying that they do not know that as Metro Access customers, they're eligible for the free ride program. Now, why does that matter to Metro? Well, you all know why. We made those rides free because we want people to take advantage of bus and rail whenever they can. We don't hassle them to do it, but we invite them to do it. And if they're not doing it because they simply don't even know that they're allowed to ride for free, that concerns me. That's a problem that I think we could easily solve by just knowing the right way to reach people. So the thing that I want to leave you with is that Mr. Minster's work here does two things for us. It does take the temperature of the Metro Access customers to say, is Metro doing a good job with its paratransit service? That's one. But the other one is Metro reaching the public and making them aware of those things that they either have a right to or that they need to know? And when I don't see those numbers come up, you know, I'm sitting with my team and we're scratching our head. And okay, how do we get people to understand this information better? Is there something we're not doing? Are we not putting out enough word? And so I am coming to you today to say that any suggestion that you all have on how we could do a better job reaching the community to make them aware of these things, we'd be happy to explore because we want to bring these numbers up.
So I know I'm going to let Ms. Bellamy speak, and I know this is a good segue into the customer education campaign. Maybe that'd be part of that. But go ahead, Ms. Bellamy. We do need to get to the next presentation.
I've been saying this for years. What I think in eligibility, they should have a time to sit in a class to tell what a Metro Access can do and what it can't be. The moment they come in, because what happens, you're playing the video, but I've been in there, they're not paying attention. At one time, they thought because they came in the front door, you brought them in, that when you get home, you're gonna bring them in and give them a wheelchair. I think, and I've said this years back, we need to start at when they first come in. Let them know we're not going in the house and tell them why. And also tell them what can be done and what can't be done when they first come into eligibility, because that's where the problem starts. They think that driver's gonna go in the inside, a driver can do this, you know, we need to educate them from the very beginning. And even the ones that own Metro Access, when they come back, they have to sit through maybe a 20-minute frame in a room where they will have to watch. At least we'll know they understand what Metro Access can do and what it can't do. And that would save us a lot of trouble with customers asking for things that can handle. Even if you just demonstrate, I got two more seconds. Even if you demonstrate what happens when you take 20 minutes to come outside your house, you know, show them what it does to Miss Cutler, because we all got to work together now.
Okay, thank you. Albert, I'm going to let you go. Then, briefly, we need to get to this next one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. I just want to say on what Ms. Devaney has said, but as an addition to that, I think that during the eligibility interview, we should be a little bit more precisely and just concrete about what you can do with these cards, basically. I know that you go through all the instructions and guidelines how to use MetroAccess, but specifically with the card, show the card and explain to them. But mostly in speaking on behalf of non-English speakers, if you can explain to them in Spanish or in other language, in sign language, etc., but the way that they can use the card if they are eligible for this. And as a third option, it would be to disseminate the information through those agencies that work in the District of Columbia, Maryland, or Virginia, offering social services to different groups, such as people with disabilities, that they might be eligible for this service. If you explain to these agencies in advance information of Metro, so they can disseminate this to the folks or participants that they go to these agencies, when they come here, they already know. So it's kind of a quick way to educate the community as well.
Well, I need to move on. We need to move on. And I'm sure this is going to come up with customer education campaign. And I believe MTM is doing that presentation.
Yes, that is correct. Right. We have Mr. Carlton Brown, who's the Quality Insurance Administrative Manager with MTM.
We didn't thank you for
your
information.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Meiser.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.
Chair, before Mr. Brown begins, I just want to add that Mr. Mintzer was listening to your feedback, and he said that he may have an additional gift for the committee that that he might want to share later, which is to measure how the knowledge of the customers changes over time. Like, in other words, if we do all the things that, that Carolyn and Elver suggested at the beginning, how long would they retain that information? You know, if we ask them right after they've been through eligibility and right after they got the information, we could take one test and then say, okay, how much of this information do they, would they retain and make use of sometime later? And also, Cheryl, if I could just ask you, considering how much we pack into the eligibility appointments already, I think we have to be very careful how we do that. But I'd like us to talk with Elver and Carolyn a little bit more about their suggestion, just to see what's possible. Can't promise anything, but I want to make sure that we take your suggestion seriously and really give it some thought before we reply to the committee. Thank you for your suggestion. Mr. Brown.
Good evening to the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Again, my name is Carlton Brown. I'm a Quality Assurance Administrative Manager with MTM. This evening, as many of you are aware, most of the time I'm in front of this committee, I speak to you about the customer service report with each meeting and let you know what has occurred or what we do from our end from an investigative standpoint. With the brief time that I have with you this evening, I want to make sure that you're fully understanding of what MTM can, what we provide to the service, and in totality. So I will be introducing our operations, quality assurance measures, and functions that we provide to the MetroAccess service. So with that, just again, a brief introduction. For the MetroAccess service, we are the independent monitoring and review provider of quality assurance for MetroAccess service. What that amounts to is really just providing that independent assessment. And so that means providing transparency to you, our customers, to the service providers, as well as to the leadership of MetroAccess through understanding what's occurring on a day-in, day-out basis regarding the service. That comes down to us through identifying problems proactively, identifying solutions from problems that have come about through running the service on a day-to-day basis. But also, it comes through verifying that the corrective actions that have been proposed by all involved in the service have actually been followed through with, so changes can actually take place. In each day, MTM is really focused on probably seven core things that really affect the customer on a day-in, day-out basis. Of course, you're probably fully aware of the no-show, late cancellation reviews that we conduct. You also interact with us through the customer service investigations that we provide, and then the data that supports that that comes from understanding that. What you may not be aware of, and what I'm going to introduce to you tonight, is the facility and maintenance evaluations that we perform every day. The safety and street monitoring function that is also provided. And lastly, the operational control center monitoring that we provide. So I'll step through those three operational functions with the time that I have. With regards to the safety and street monitoring, in essence, there are some very key alignments to the service delivery provider and to what has to occur each day. That involves daily street level monitoring from the standpoint of we have plain dress clothes individuals out in the field witnessing individuals being escorted from door to the vehicle, actually doing trail checks, maybe following the vehicle in some cases, or maybe remaining at a high volume location to understand exactly how the operators are interacting with the customers from the time that they pick up the customer at the door to the time that they verify their identification, having them sign the manifest, and then onboard someone to the vehicle. In any of those scenarios, and in that situation as a whole, there are occasions where we may be far away and we may be not in sight, but there are also many occasions where we're right there in the midst of it and the operator is unaware, but we are documenting and understanding that they're following procedure and policies that we've established. When that occurs, again, there is a feedback loop that I will be discussing here shortly. Some additional duties that we perform are also for customers. We review locations for safety, for unsafe stops, and additionally the surroundings that may be at these locations that draw questions of whether or not they are door-to-door serviceable, or whether or not someone has to be present at all times just because of the flow of traffic. We assist our service delivery providers in assessing that information as well. So lastly, with that, we also provide real-time feedback. If we witness any unsafe act, we notify the service delivery provider of the operator in question of the vehicle, so direct action can be taken right then and there. That's the safety and street monitoring. For facility and maintenance evaluations, each morning, we have dedicated individuals that go out to the bases. They assess from the very beginning of a day to the end of a day. So what that means is they're there for garage pullouts. They assess what's going on with vehicles in terms of the ready line. Do the vehicles look good? Are the vehicles clean? They assess it before the vehicle leaves that base to where they can pull that vehicle out of that ready line. To where corrective action can be taken. Because it doesn't help anybody if a vehicle goes out dirty. The customer will let our complaint department know that I rode on a vehicle that was not clean. So in many respects, we're trying to prevent any incident of that from occurring. And so that's why we do it beforehand. we strive to capture that. We strive to understand what's occurring with the registration or the documentation for the vehicle itself that day, making sure everything's in the proper place because, again, it has to be in place for the vehicle to leave that base. Along with that, you have a great opportunity when we're on site at the base to do an audit of files. So whether it's the maintenance records for the vehicle in question, whether it's documentation for the operator and ensuring that all their documentation is aligned correctly, whether that means that the fluids for the vehicle or the actual tire depth of the threads match to what was required to perform the service that day. We document all this information, we provide that feedback, we understand what fluids are in plain sight of the facility and if they have proper documentation, and we make sure that in the end, if it's not in line with what's being shown to us in terms of the documentation's not in line, that again, we follow the feedback loop that quality assurance has. Lastly, the operational control center monitoring is a two-pronged approach. We have a dedicated team of individuals that actually reviews the calls made to Where's My Ride, as well as they review the calls made to the reservations department. Each of the departments have different scripts that should be followed, and they have different bits of information that should be shared or conveyed to the customer. In doing that, we evaluate each agent based off of a scorecard of whether or not they're adhering to that and whether or not they're meeting that standard. If they do not meet that standard, again, there's a feedback loop that is followed to ensure that change can quickly occur. Let's focus solely on the Where's My Ride agent and the reservations agent. In terms of the operational control center and the process evaluations, there are processes and policies that should be followed in accordance to contractual agreements, in accordance to what has been deemed as the best practice operationally from Metro Access leadership and all involved. We spend time every day evaluating if that's occurring through observation, through live monitoring. When U.S. customers come and mention that, you know, we see too many or we experience too many trip movements, well, there's a policy in place that should be adhered to for when a trip is moved. There's a why behind it. There's a method to executing it. There's a determination that should be made if it's a proper trip movement. With our evaluations that we do, we do work very hard to identify if there are lapses in that process by the individual or by what may be trained to the dispatchers, and we provide recommendations to, again, to have changes occur, whether in real time or over a longer period of time. But in the end, there's a follow-up that has to occur that we verify those changes to occur. So from a three-pronged approach, that describes our operational alignment. Again, safety and street monitoring, facility and maintenance evaluations, then the operational control center monitoring. In the end, it goes back to quality assurance. And what I mean by that is you're going to identify, it's a 360-degree process. You're going to identify, you're going to notify, you're going to correct, and then you're going to reevaluate. So for us, that's identifying if there are errors being made. Then from that point, we do let Operational Control Center know that we've identified some errors made on service delivery providers, that their operators may or may not have met the standard for that day from a policy standpoint, or that vehicle was not in line with the standard that we have as Metro Access. So from that, upon that notification, there's a duration of where they have to provide a response to it. And with that response, they have to describe a corrective action. And with that corrective action, it has to be documentation. We go back, we evaluate if that corrective action has been taken by way of evaluating the paperwork and the flow of information. And then again, it comes back down to reevaluation. And what that means is that there was a corrective action taken, there should be proper documentation in place that says this actually occurred. And then, again, the hope of all of this is to say, well, we want to prevent it from occurring again, not just to be in a cyclical type of routine. So with that, I didn't want to spend much time. I didn't have a presentation necessarily to throw up on the board, but I do know you may have some questions, and I just want to say, you know, from the time of, again, the beginning of the run to the end of the day, we're consistently measuring, reviewing. Our hope and our value add, for the service is trying to be as beneficial as we can to you, our customers, and that means that we're identifying issues with service or with occupation or with operational control center before they come about. That we're providing those recommendations on the day of and through trend analysis, and in the end, that service contractors are held accountable through our recommendations and through our follow-up.
All right, thank you so much for your presentation. So who would like to comment so I can take speaking order? And we got about 15 minutes for this before we get to customer comment period. We got Elver. Who else would like to make a comment? Anyone else? Ms. Raj? Now we'll start with Elver and see who else comes next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, thank you for the presentation and the information about the quality assurance that you guys have. It seems to me like that process where you involve the quality assurance for the entire operations has a indeed strong foundation to identify critical control points, which means these are going to be used to be proactive and not allowing things happening again and again. So my question is, if that is the structure or the foundation that this quality assurance program is having right now, why do we see quite often these complaints from customers, not only about the operations, but about vehicles and about the system itself? So what is this missing? Because I hear your presentation and it seems to me, okay, there is a quality assurance, there is a structure, it is working, it's supposed to be working. So what is the missing piece and why do we continuously listening customers about these complaints?
Thank you for the question. When you say what is the missing piece, I think of it from a standpoint that through this operation, we are all a team. With that, there are moments, and really, this is what it is. There are moments where even if I, as a QA, don't catch it, and it escapes my view, sometimes they inaccuracies or how do I say it? I just want to say, well, issues in general, they do happen. And I guess I just want to make sure that in the end, we work together as a team, and we make sure that if there is something on my end that I see, that we report it through. How does that come about from if it does repeat again? Sometimes the controls that each of our team members have in place may not be as tight as we need them to be to prevent it. So that's where, again, our process, even though we do have it in place, it does not mean that it's going to be perfect. So we have to reevaluate. We have to continue this process improvement through reiterations and through trial, and sometimes that may unfortunately mean that we may miss some things. So that's what I kind of look at it as from the why standpoint. I know this is probably not the greatest answer on it, to be honest with you, but it's the honest answer from my perspective.
All right, thank you. Denise Rush, followed by Mr. Kent.
I don't know if this is part of MGM, but I've noticed this past week, I thought that the trapeze system would not allow you to have two trips at the same, within the same hour. And I don't know if that's a, you all need to look into that. They came to my door at 5:15 in the morning, and I had a trip at 5:49. But on the system, I had two trips, a 5 to 5:30 and a 5:49 to 6 something. It shouldn't allow you to have a trip in the same hour, should it? And then it happened again. So it showed where I have a trip from being picked up at 3:30 to 4 and 3:35 to 4 in the afternoon on the same day. I think there's something happening with the.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't think that's operator error. I think that's system error.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. It could be, but I don't know. But you need to look into it because it's happened twice within 2 weeks. There's something wrong. But I'm kind of with Elvin. There's a missing piece because the same complaints, the same things are happening over and over and over. And it's that there is a piece missing. If you're, you know, checking and you're checking and someone's checking and watching and everybody's doing what they should do. Yes, some things can fall through the crack, but now too many things are falling. It's not a crack now, it's a big hole.
Thank you. With regard to the potential scheduling aspect.
Yeah, Ms. Rice, this is Allison Anderson. We can certainly take a look over the last 2 weeks and try to identify what you're describing.
Yeah, I got a call today and they said that they noticed the first time that I called it. It's they noticed it, they could see it, but it's, you know, it's happened twice. And I thought that you couldn't, it wouldn't allow you to do that.
Well, I can't really say what, you know, to try to diagnose at this point, but we'll certainly take a look and see what's happening and then be able to get back with you with what we find there. But it does seem a bit odd for what you're describing, so I'm definitely interested to see what's, you know, dig in and see what's going on.
All right. Pat, go ahead.
Thank you.
Mr. Kent, sorry.
Mr. Kent is first, I believe.
Well, you may have a question that perhaps Mr. Kent, I think, will comprehensively answer, knowing him very well. That's why I'm letting the committee members go before.
I refer to the AGM. But I'll maybe slightly rephrase the questions that Denise asked and Elmer asked. So do you track the issues as they come through? What issues are you seeing that that are major issues? And do you look at sort of the root cause behind the issues so that we can see what we can do to minimize them? Are we seeing progress? I guess is number one. And what do we do about the root cause for some of these issues? Is it resources, manpower, training?
Thank you. So for the first part of your question, the answer is yes, we do trend. And again, most of my expertise is on the administrative side of things. So when you talk about trending, we talk about complaints from a reactive standpoint, complaints that have been investigated, where we identify the root cause through investigation, and we take that information, and every week we provide some type of recommendation, whether it's to the to the service delivery as a whole, or whether it's to the operational control center as a whole, from what we may be seeing for that week or for that month. From an operational standpoint, again, because it deals more in real time, we're able to still trend it through a monthly data, but we work to correct it every day because of the nature of it. So, in essence, what you know is what's happening to service getting better. There are areas that we've seen some digression, but I think that's mostly been based off of not having enough operators. Mm-hmm. But in terms of facilities themselves, facilities are more cognizant of what they're doing from an operational day-to-day standpoint because of our reporting. So they're making corrective actions to where when we do go out and perform a facility and maintenance evaluation, they're not scoring low, they're scoring higher. And are with regard to performance, safety, and street evaluations, while we may see some things from the operational standpoint, they may not impact the experience that the customer would have on the vehicle, in fact. But from a policy and from a Metro Access standpoint, we want to correct them all. So we let them know that, you know, if we're seeing operators that aren't following to the T, you know, the cone, whether they should place a cone, for example, when they back up, that's the first thing we're going to address, because we look long from a long-term picture of saying that if they're not following the small aspect, they're not going to follow the large aspect that has to go with backing or has to transport the customer. So we really work hard to do that in real time and make sure that that is occurring. But again, there are improvements being made. I think what our operation is facing as a whole is probably creating more of a challenge on some areas to where some of the experience that you're feeling when you're on the vehicle, where we might see from a complaint standpoint, individuals or customers may say they're on a vehicle too long, and or they may say, well, I've seen so many trips move in and off, and I don't understand why. Well, operationally, there are good decisions being made, and there are some decisions that can be made a little better from our evaluation, and that's what we're trying to make sure that we correct and make sure that the good decisions are the best decisions, and that the decisions that could be made better are actually known why they could be made better. So.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kent. I guess I look to you now to give a, sort of a summation of this and respond to any other concerns. Thank you. Thank you for that interview.
Great intro.
Go ahead, Mr. Kent, if you bring any type of closure and final comments to this so I can get the customer comment period. Wait, Mr. Do you have a comment that's related to this? I'm looking at you, Steve. No?
No.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Brown, for your presentation today. You know, about 4 years ago, Metro staff made a change to the paratransit business model in which we created the quality assurance function. And I know this committee has asked us a few times, you know, can you tell us what they do and what, you know, what they produce? And the reason why we created it was because we felt that in the previous contract, where one contractor was performing all the functions, you know, there was always a QA function of some kind with Metro Access. It's just the old contractor was asked to do the QA on itself, mainly because Metro did not want to have too much of the work being done by staff, because outsourcing the service was an economic decision that was made over 20 years ago when the service first began. So we had one contractor doing all of the work. In fact, at one time, they were managing eligibility also. LogistiCare was doing all of that work in the old days, in the very old days. And so now we have eligibility in-house, and we have all the other functions are outsourced. But in the new model, the call center is run separately, and the QA function is newly established and running separately. what Metro uses the QA function for, you know, to try to answer Elver's question in a more simple terms. You know, why do you cut the grass if it's just going to grow back? You know, I mean, you know, it's like, oh, we see the same issues. You're going to see the same issues because the vehicles are always going to be driven by human drivers unless we do driverless paratransit vehicles like some of my IT friends have suggested, but I don't think I'm quite ready for that. I don't think you're quite ready for that, but I know I'm not ready for that. We have human beings making these decisions. What we use MTM for is not that we have some foolish notion that anybody is going to come in and eliminate all of our mistakes. You know, that's not going to happen. The purpose of QA is to bring to management's attention the areas we need to be paying attention to. When the deficiencies are identified, we ask the contractors involved to make corrections, but those corrections very often are going to apply to the employees that they have on board now. If those same individuals continue to repeat their mistakes, they're not going to make it. And then they'll have to onboard someone else and give another person a chance to do the job or make the same mistakes that the last person did. And it goes on and on and on. Okay? That is the nature of running a service. Now, we also use MTM to verify whether or not the information we're receiving about the service is accurate. Is the data that Mr. Hayford is reporting out through the financial wing of our department accurate? Is the information we're receiving from the contractors accurate? MTM has created a host of new report cards for the contractors that we didn't have before. Some of them refer to the condition of their garages where our vehicles are kept. They're Metro-owned vehicles. They need to be maintained to a standard, and MTM monitors that. Metro does not have many staff that are dedicated to driving out in the field and watching how drivers treat you. But MTM personnel do that. They have vehicles, they go out, they observe, and they report back to the other contractors who's delivering door-to-door service and who isn't, who's being courteous and who isn't. They help evaluate the performance of the call center. You heard Mr. Brown talk about the OCC monitoring. So they take a good look at the way that reservations agents and dispatchers are treating customers. And when they find that that performance is not what it's supposed to be, that too is brought to the attention of the appropriate management and corrective actions are taken. There's going to be a need to do this forever. So the real issue is, every single day and every month that the QA group gives information to us, how well we take that information and use it to get better performance out of the employees is really, and the contract employees, is really the measure of whether this is working or not. It's not, you know, Mr. Brown only gets an A when there are no more problems in the world. No. Mr. Brown gets an A when he brings back meaningful data for us to act upon, and I think he's doing that. He and his other colleagues at MTM, Ms. Linnea Mobley, who's not here today, but she's done a fantastic job. She does operations. Mr. Brown does the administrative side. You know, there was a time not that long ago when Metro was answering to a class action lawsuit. And one of the things we, you know, when we settled that suit, the attorney said, well, how do we know if Mr. Kent comes along and says that we've had 92% on time performance this month, that's really true. So we added to that settlement a process where the on-time performance, the manifest from the drivers, the vouchers from the taxi operators are examined to make sure that they're authentic. And there's comparison done with our GPS data that, you know, ensures that the information that we post for the public is accurate. That is why we have MTM, because when we talk with them, they are not representing their own performance. They are representing what they've observed of other contractors. And the hope is that with that measure of objectivity, there's no conflict of interest asking one company to grade itself. So when the famous question of Denise Rush, when she asks, who's watching the watchers? This is one of the answers that Metro tried to give, is that now that MTM is observing the other contractors, and of course we are working with and observing MTM. But what we gained by hiring this company and separating QA from the other contractors is that now we have a dedicated team of professionals who every single day their job is to do nothing but to watch and evaluate Metro Access, both administratively and operationally, and I think that's a real value to the customers. So, you know, in the future, if there are specific aspects of Metro Access performance that you'd like to look at, you know, either the staff that works under Mr. June, the Metro Compliance team, or the folks at MTM will be available, either one or both of them, to provide you that information. Thank you again, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Brown, for
now, what I can do is put you on the customer contract. I do need to get to start with customers because it is 5:35, and the anchors really want to speak. So I do want to repeat that the AAC last week made, well, 2 weeks ago made a motion is to, you need to be present to speak your 3 minutes. If you do have something in writing that comes in, our recommendation has been that that does come in to Metro Access staff to thoroughly investigate, as they usually do, and we'll report out to that customer, and we will receive copies as quickly as feasible of that written either concern or complaint. So having said that, 3 minutes, and we will start with Nicole Miller.
I think she departed.
Oh, okay. Staff, if you have her, if we can contact her wherever her her concern or issue or combination is,
please do so,
and we can include that in the report since she was here. I would appreciate that. The same thing with Bill Orleans. Thank you. And that puts the next person to be Sandra Polk. 3 minutes.
Good evening. Overall, I am pleased with the services that I received from Metro Access. However, yesterday, I had a pickup schedule from 12:45 until 1:15. The driver arrived at 1:37. Now, I had another pickup at 2:30. For the 1:37 pickup, I arrived home at 2:15, which gave me a little time for the 2:30 pickup. I was told by the driver that I was an add-on at the beginning of his lunch break. Therefore, I had to wait until he finishes lunch before he could come and pick me up. Now, that was the second incident of when I was an add-on, and the driver was on lunch, and I had to wait for them to pick me up. I had to wait until they completed their lunch for them to pick me up. My question is, do you have drivers, on-call drivers, that will do services when there is lateness on those shows?
All right, thank you so much. And Ms. Anderson, do you want to take that customer's question?
Good afternoon, Ms. Ball. Thank you for alerting us to your service issue yesterday. To answer your question, our service is not such that we have designated on-call operators. The operators that are in service are all within the bounds. If they are near the location, we can call on them to conduct a trip. It's just a matter of working with our system to see which vehicle, if we do need to do a certain movement, what vehicle is in the best position to conduct a trip. So we don't necessarily have extra vehicles that are out there without any trip awaiting an emergency situation. We're trying to, as efficiently as possible, utilize all of our vehicles that are in service at that particular time to get our passengers picked up within the requisite pickup windows.
All right, thank you so much. Next person is going to be Sharon Beal, if I'm saying it correctly. 3 minutes.
You said I couldn't speak for it.
Oh, okay. Then, all right. Then the next person is Seema Gross.
You said
oh,
I couldn't
okay.
speak for her.
Oh, okay. So that question was not here. All right. So, Billie Jean, it will be you next, and 3 minutes, please.
It's just amazing how things get voted. First, I was told if you bring information in detail, then I could read it. And I wrote it in last month, and then a couple of weeks after, it's voted that I can't do it anymore. And this is the second time that I was told something that all of a sudden cannot be done anymore. So I'll take that, but I thought we were here to help the clients, but we never run out of time, so it's not that I take up time for that. But if that's what you want to do to penalize clients that can't come, I don't know where the compassion is. But my problem is, I'm still having this problem with this $650, which I haven't had ever until I accepted one. It's normally $450 or less any of my rides, except when I go to Silver Spring. Also, I don't understand I will give you a compliment. I don't have as many lateness like I used to, and I don't feel so guilty when I have to go home and you put a client on mine when we're going towards Silver Spring that needs to go to Glen Arden. So I'm glad you have corrected that and stopped touring these clients all over the city. But still, I think you ought to be more compassionate with the ones who come from dialysis, getting them there and taking them home. And that's that. So I guess next month I'll be voted that I can't speak.
Ms. Anderson, would you like to respond to our question?
Yes, sir. Actually, Ms. Armstrong, I'm going to have the folks from MGM discuss the follow-up actions that were taken with the individuals that you did bring forward last meeting. They do have information relative to that, so I'll ask them to share what they can with you on that. Additionally, I believe MTM also had information relative to your fare question of the $650, and so I'll ask them also to make sure that you have all the pertinent information relative to that inquiry. But we do ask that if you do have information relative to other customers that you can share with us, if they've written a letter or whatever, please do feel free to give that to staff or any one of us, and we'll be glad to follow up on that.
I think it's better to be heard because somebody else could have the same problem, and the solution would help them too.
All right. Also, Ms. Anderson, for these two customers that are listed here who are not present, if you, your team could follow up with them with their concerns, maybe submit it in writing today or any other follow-ups, that way the committee can get that information and see what follow-up has been done.
Yes,
sir.
Pat? Yeah, thank you, Mom. I think that that's, although I understand the issue with respect to customers being here and wanting to get the problems address. I understand that. But I also understand that this could lead in not doing that and not following the policy that we instituted at the AAC. could in some ways impact customers' privacy with information that they are not sharing, being disseminated and then sharing the results back when they're not here. So although I understand the issue of wanting to assist customers, I think that having them write it out, follow up as you're doing, as we're doing here, I think that helps protect the individuals and the committee from having any issues with respect to privacy and other customers' business.
Thank you, Pat.
The information that I read was from the customer, directly from the customer.
I understand. But I think it also, I understand that. I think it also could be a situation where that could be misused. I'm just trying to, on the one hand, provide a solution and also protect customers and the committee from getting involved in something that might turn out to be a little difficult.
Thank you so much.
They tried other ways. That's why I was bringing it to the committee's meeting.
Thank you, Billie Jean. Okay, next, Tappan. Did you have a comment?
Alibi. Mr. Kent, you too?
Three minutes, Tappan.
See if I can listen now. My question is that every year we have the same kind of complaint. We're very similar to the same complaint. Timing not coming. Drivers are there, customers are not happy, all the things. And we talked about satisfaction of management operations and also we talked about education. It seems to me, you're doing everything, I see that Walmart has been everything it could be done. And we as a community are trying our best to do it. But I think what's missing in this, I feel very strongly, that we are dealing with disabled people. Now, not every expert who knows management, who knows operations, who knows how to deal with customers, disabled people customers are not the same. So you should have somebody experienced in your system who is knowledgeable with disabled people and corporation management and understanding their needs. And have their proper understanding with the disabled people relationship. And there are companies that can do it. I don't know what any company background, how many people they have hired disabled, or how many people they have got expert on disabled area to give lectures to the OMATA, the CEO, or OMATA management, or OMATA operation people. You've got to get disabled people in the system, then you understand. As I say, nothing about us without us. There's a famous motto going on. Exactly. So that's what is lacking, really. Every other year for 5-6 years, companies are pretty much the same. Same company, different voices, different gender, but it's coming the same. So you got to get, maybe you could use some of the members of this committee who are disabled, understand the need there, and maybe we should volunteer for them. You know, it just you got to get, because you don't have any disabled people management system. I can see them like this. One lady was there when I came in front, but she wanted to be part of the transportation. But you don't have it. You got to get disabled people involved in disability cause. And at least one or two or three. But you, there are a lot of good people out there in the world, and you can have it. So that's the only point I want to say.
Okay, and anyone wants to respond to it? And yes. Then right after you, I want to take Nicole because I want to make sure she speaks before anyone else. So did you want to respond to Tappan? Then I'm going to get to her.
Yes, just to say that I agree with you completely, and I was the person who appointed that one disabled person to be the director of Metro Access because I thought it was a good idea. You know, I think that, and I might add for the committee's edification that she also, in my view, was the most qualified at the time to take the job. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. You know, we don't place people with disabilities simply because we're trying to meet a diversity goal. There are also people with disabilities out there who legitimately qualify for these jobs, and I think that's an important thing. My department also supports hiring people with disabilities. David Schaefer, who is our ombudsman, has been working very closely with our human resources department to bring more people into Metro in various areas who have disabilities to help make that happen. Now, I'll say this much. You said it's the same type of complaints. Very important that we are clear, though, on what is and what isn't good performance. Because, as I said, it's the same type of complaint. I mean, what if I told you, yeah, you know, the complaints, we still have complaints that Metro Access is late. Only the on-time performance was 96%. You know, I can live with 4% of the people being late, you know? I mean, I think that's kind of the point, is that, yes, until we are perfection and it's Jesus Christ transportation, there is going to be lateness. The issue is, what is a threshold of acceptable lateness? That's really what we're talking about. What we're not saying is, we're going to eliminate lateness. We're going to eliminate every mistake that anybody could make. No, that is not possible. What we can do is we can manage to reduce the errors as much as we possibly can, and that's why we use performance measures. So that when we can sit in here and look at the numbers that Mr. Hayford provides, we can ask ourselves the question, is this good? Is it good enough? And if it isn't, you know, what steps should we take? But I have to say that while I agree with you, Tappan, it's the same types of things we talk about. We have had, since we switched to that new business model, some of the best operational numbers. In 2014 and 2015, we have had lower complaints on Metro Access than we did in any of the years of the prior contract. The prior contract had a goal of 5 complaints per 1,000 trips requested, and in 7.5 years, we never met it. And after we switched over to the new model, we need it all the time. I mean, this past year we've had issues. 2016 was a rough year because of the driver issue. But in 2013, 2014, 2015, Metro Access was cruising. And so, you know, I think it's important to recognize that. You know, we don't brag, we don't beat our chest because we know that we're just one bad day away from, you know, getting back in the soup again, okay? But the fact is that was 3 years that those statistics were very strong. And that was a result of the hard work of a lot of people, these same contractors that are sitting here with us tonight. And they've been struggling because of resources recently. We've been meeting with them, and we've been working on what it is we need to do. But none of us are telling each other that we're going to eliminate lateness and we're going to eliminate mistakes. What we're working toward is a respectable level of transportation service. And we need you all to be on the same page with us about what good performance is. And if you disagree with our definitions, please tell us. Because we'll talk with you about it. We want to be on the same page with this committee. It's very important that we're speaking in common terms about it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I'm going to go with Nicole, then I'll go back to Darnese, Pat, and then Denise has the last word. Go ahead, Nicole, 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to let you guys know that things have been improving. And I would also like to take this time to thank you very much for, you know, that week where we had to kind of shut things down because of the weather and everything. But I have to say that Metro Access was really there for me, especially when the city of DC was not so proactive about clearing the ways, you know, how you're doing curb to curb. That was even a challenge, but, you know, the drivers met it, and I'm very thankful. And, you know, when you can't get where you need to go, everything's out of whack, and, you know, things like that are very important. And what you guys need to also focus on is taking care of your own people, because around Christmas time you guys were offering bonuses for drivers working extra shifts and everything, and your payroll wasn't coming through for them. And you know, and please don't use this as a takeaway to admonish the drivers to not talk with clients about their problems. When your paycheck is not right, everything's not right for you. Just sort of like when my Metro Access trips are going nuts, the people at my work hear about it. In fact, the Department of Homeland Security knows all about you guys. But, you know, I'm really hoping that, you know, you need to take care of your drivers. We all who use Metro Access, we really depend on them. And if you're not getting their paychecks right, that's a huge thing. And you guys are talking about having driver shortages. They're not going to want to come through for you when you're not paying them correctly. And, you know, you may be telling them that you're going to pay them more, but giving them what you say you're going to give them is a good step in the right direction. So, you know, just make sure your systems are on point. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Darnice, and then Patrick, and then Denise with the last word.
This is Darnice. I wanted to make a comment that about the information that was distributed last week for in terms of the snow. I thought that was pretty timely, but in some of the cases, most of the people didn't find out that the buses wouldn't be running Tuesday after 4 o'clock until it was too late for them to change their schedule. So, and also people didn't know for sure about Wednesday because you obviously didn't know until Wednesday. So that was sort of up in the air. For people that use Metro Access. But all in all, I thought that the call to have the drivers and passengers off the street early was a good call. And most of the drivers actually did do door-to-door service and assisted their clients even more. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate the information.
Thank you, Pat, then followed by Denise for the last one.
And I will agree with that last comment. The call on, I guess it was Monday, to suspend the meeting for that night, I think it was a good call. We didn't have any idea what the safety issues were going to be, so I think that made sense to not come out here on that Monday. So nice call on that. The other thing that I wanted to, and I verified that this was Mr. Kent, checking the on-time performance for the last 3 months, I think it was 83%. What was it, January, December?
We're up to 87%.
Yeah, we're up to 80. We had 86, now we're up to 87, almost 88. So our jumps are not huge, but at least we're trending in the right direction, and that's a good thing. That's what I wanted to check. Thanks.
All right, Denise, you have the last word.
I have a question about May schedule activity going to the OCC. Are we getting new members in June?
The new members, B's going to respond to that.
Hello? Are we getting new members in June?
We'll be doing a recruitment.
Yes.
And in our recruitment, we do have some members that are not returning to the AAC. So through that recruitment, we anticipate to have new members. And those new members will start in July.
In July. Okay. Well, I'm not understanding or I'm questioning why are we going to OCC when we should be going with the new members. I would think it would be better. What do you all think?
All right.
I think we should wait. Yeah, we're scheduled to go to the OCC in May, and I think we need to change that because it would be better to go with the new members so they could get a full picture of, you know, right from the beginning of what's going on.
Well, Madam Vice Chair, if the committee would like to change the work plan, then they need to discuss that and make the motion to change the work plan.
Okay, well.
Well, we can do that, but I think we're amenable to maybe looking at it possibly in the fall when we have a new full committee as a possibility, but can we do that at the next meeting? Oh, the Operations Control Center for Metro Access in Hyattsville.
Yeah, if I can just make a comment,
right.
That there was not, say, something written in stone to where we needed to have that in May. I think we just follow kind of the historical precedent over the last couple of years and just try to make it an annual event. So I'm sure if the committee would like to have that happen at another time, I'm sure that we can work with the committee to make that happen.
All right, so.
Okay, and is there any update on the abilities ride?
Supposedly, I see it on next month's calendar. Supposedly,
Mr. Blake.
Is that what's going to happen next month?
That's
tentative. Mr. Blake said it's tentative for next month.
All right. And is Mr. Roth here today?
No, he's not.
Mr. Blake, you have any information for me?
He sent out a new card today.
Thank you.
All right. On that, can I get a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
All those in favor of adjournment, please do so by saying aye, nay, abstentions, motion carries. Adjourn.
I was just saying she was back, and Ms. Rush didn't get a chance to. She was giving me an award or something. I
oh, I already gave it to her.
Oh, okay. We okay.
Already did that.
Gotcha.
Okay.